everyone, and welcome to the SmackDown Summary. This is SmackDown Summary number 78, I think. David, did we record Raw Rundown 78 yesterday that I just edited and recorded, so I should know this? Yes.
Yes.
All right, this is the SmackDown Summary episode number 78, and because Kenny is still off gallivanting with Shawn Michaels on tour, they had a show in Manchester tonight, which according to Kenny, they fucking nailed. I saw that on Twitter, and it made me so, so happy to see that. It looks like the tour is going awesome, but that means that Kenny is away and couldn't, you know, get a chance to watch Raw and SmackDown, so joining me this week, David J. McCutcheon. Hello, David.
It's always, this is like the one plus to Kenny going gallivanting with all of his famous friends, Sandra, because you we're not famous. We're the mud people. You know, we're cast aside over here on our respective programs. And you know what? There's no other place I'd rather be. Shawn Michaels seems like a lovely fellow, but you know, I wouldn't go out gallivanting with Shawn Michaels if I had the opportunity, Sandra, to speak with you about the wonders of Raw and SmackDown.
Well, of course. I mean, who would want to go and do a tour of Dublin and Belfast and Manchester and London and Glasgow when we could, you know, be at home talking about WWE on television?
But, you know, Sandra, let me tell you, my favorite place to be is home, because whenever you're home, there's no people, and people are the worst.
Except for people you choose to be with. Like, the people allow into our homes, our spouses, for instance. I'm okay with them.
Exactly. And I'm sure that all the wonderful people who come out to the Inside the Ropes live events are absolutely tremendous. I'm not talking about you guys. I'm talking about all the people that we have to pass on our way to the venues and to the cities. All of the pedestrians that are walking in the road when you're trying to drive, and all the people in the vehicles who don't know how to drive. It's all maddening. And I would just prefer to stay here and chat with my good, close, personal friend, Sandra.
And it is lovely to chat with you as well. We don't do this very often. And I feel like, you know, I was on the Raw Rundown a couple weeks ago and then again yesterday. And now we're doing the SmackDown Summary. We're gonna get a little too used to this. Kenny's going to come back and I'll just be like, where's David? What's going on here?
Yeah. You know, Kenny, I'm sorry to say, but you've been replaced. We found a better co-host for the Raw Rundown, because now it's my show. It's my show over on the Raw Rundown.
David's taken over.
this is your show here on the SmackDown Summary. We are the glue that binds these two shows together. And Kenny just hops in and out like a sporadic Robert Duffin.
Ooh, if he's getting Robert Duffin status, that's pretty. Them's fighting words, I'm sure.
He's just popping in and out. He's Robert Duffin without the sophistication or taste in music. That's what he is. So, you know, just you pop in and out whenever you damn well please. But me and Sandra, we're good old reliable, trusty co-hosts.
I mean, one of us has never missed a week. I'm just saying.
It's true. And, you know, I will say this, too. I only missed 1 week for heart surgery. I don't know if you knew that I had it, son.
Did you? I had never heard that before. So thank you for letting us know.
I did. So, you know, it's not often that the only reason I miss is due to business trips, which pay me more than Inside the Ropes, and I go where the money is. I'm a lucrative businessman. Call me Ric Flair Jr. because I do sort of look like him now, not back whenever he was handsome.
Do you also make an entrance into your home? Do you just play music and then go woo every time you walk into a room?
Yes.
I imagine that's how Ric Flair lives his life.
Yeah. I don't flash my dick at everyone. But other than that, that sounds like me. That definitely does. So, absolutely. Sadly, I don't have a robe, but I do walk around in Val's robe. So that I do look very pretty in it. So
I'm sure it's very form-fitting on you.
It is. You know, I have curves, Sandra.
I know.
and I wear them well. I'm very proud of my body type, thank you. Which, as we all know, is half melted snowman. So there you go.
It's just such an image. I'm picturing a half melted snowman at the moment wearing one of Val's robes, which I haven't seen Val's robes, but I imagine they're luxurious.
Yeah. No. Definitely Charlotte Flair style, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Like a glorious peacock.
Yes, exactly. Nothing short of spectacular for Miss Val.
Yes, of course, of course. David, one of the things I wanted to bring up, and I wish I had seen this yesterday before we recorded the Raw Rundown, but I didn't. On Twitter, actually, because this is about Woke and Matt Hardy, and I know that this is Raw related, but because I didn't bring it up yesterday, and probably I derailed the conversation into a, you know, love letter to Heath Slater and Rhino, because whenever they're on screen, that's just what I tend to do.
Understandable.
You know how things go. Apparently, someone had a sign at Raw that said, "Donde está Señor Benjamin?" You know, where is Señor Benjamin? And Señor Benjamin himself actually tweeted, "Una buena pregunta, amigo, vas a ver en tiempo," which means good question, friend. We will see in time, or you will see in time. And Matt Hardy actually retweeted this and quote tweeted it with translation. So Matt Hardy is indicating that maybe some of the broken universe is going to come into the Woken universe. And I know he actually put a video on his YouTube too that just said, "Vanguard One, I knew you'd come."
Could you imagine Vanguard One with like WWE production at WrestleMania?
Right? Honestly, what I want from this and what I saw in my head immediately when I read this tweet was, can you imagine Matt Hardy being accompanied to the ring by like 50 drones?
Yeah, just a fleet of drones.
An army of drones.
Oh my god.
Led by Vanguard 1, of course, but there should be Vanguards 2 through 50 accompanying.
Yeah, of course, of course. Vanguard 1 is the general of the drone fleet in the Woken... what would it be? The Woken Revolution, perhaps?
I don't know. Does he actually have a name? Well, I mean,
just the
Woken
Warriors. Yeah,
I'm guessing...
I feel like a group of warriors should be dubbed something other than just warriors, you know?
Probably. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he's still working that out. Maybe he still needs a premonition from the 70s to know what exactly to call his, you know, fleet of vanguards.
I'm
kind of excited at the prospect of some of these elements being introduced. And I don't know if WWE is going to want to, like, work with Rebby Hardy or put their children on TV or what kind of contracts need to happen to make that a thing. But even if it's just backstage vignettes or, you know, like the Fashion Files did before they started putting them just online, which, oh boy, I have a bone to pick with that.
No doubt.
You know, it'd be great to see more vignettes of Woken Matt Hardy in his universe and not just laughing on Raw, which has been our problem. We discussed that a couple weeks ago, that it seems at this point more like a nostalgia run of broken Matt Hardy than its own organic thing that keeps developing. And I think that could go a long way to developing Woken Matt Hardy. And I really, really super want to see it.
What I'm curious, though, Sandra, about is, do you think anyone from Impact would be joining him? Maybe a foe? Or maybe a friend, maybe a confidant. I don't know. Do you think?
Ooh, I don't know. What are you alluding to? Is there someone from Impact who is potentially on his way to WWE?
Yeah, potential spoilers here, guys. I don't know, but...
I mean, it's speculation at this point. We don't know anything for sure.
I think it's
okay. I mean, just keep in mind, everyone, that this is something that we don't know if it's going to happen. We don't know if there are any plans for this to happen. We don't know if this person's even going to be in WWE or not. I really, really hope he is, though. Like, I really hope he is.
Yeah, he would make all the sense in the world for the WWE to grab him. But the current rumor on the streets, you guys, is that EC3 will be coming to the Royal Rumble event itself. Yes, the Royal Rumble event. I said it because Michael Cole said it 5 million fucking times. On Raw. So you wouldn't confuse the match with the event of the Royal Rumble.
Well, it's funny how they have to say the Royal Rumble paper. Well, I guess they can't say pay-per-view anymore, can they?
No.
So it has to be the Royal Rumble event and then the Royal Rumble match.
Yeah. And it's not like anyone's going to get confused. Like, does Braun Strowman need to come out and go, "Hey, everybody, I'm entering the Royal Rumble match for the men, not the women." Like, you don't have to specify that, "Oh, I'm going to enter the women's Royal Rumble match." Really? Because Ruby Riot, I didn't think that they would let you in the men's.
Probably
so
not.
So it's like, it's like you don't have to go and you don't have to specify. We get it. We're not that dumb. But I say that, but I mean, like, fucking 50% of the audience voted for Trump. So, Who knows?
I mean, there is that to consider. So one of the things I think that's interesting about EC3 is, you know, as I was reading the same rumors and speculation as you about how EC3 and Lashley are done with Impact now. And I believe Lashley's contract is up February 1st. So there's really no chance that he could be at the Royal Rumble. But EC3's contract is like up soon enough that he can take bookings and doesn't have any restrictions on when he can appear on TV and yada, yada, yada. And this is the article I was reading. And so what I think is interesting, the article speculated that there's no way that they would start EC3 in NXT, that they would put him on the main roster. I don't know, though. Like, what do you think about that? Because I think EC3 is 100% main roster ready. I think, you know, but when he was in WWE before, he was on NXT. Like, he never even made it to the main roster. He did a couple SmackDown matches and that was it. But he was basically just on NXT and then got fired. So I'm just curious if WWE is going to see him as the incredible, incredible, total package perfect star that he is. Not that I'm a huge EC3 fan or anything, but I totally am. Derek Bateman was one of my favorites. And so I'm curious if they will see him as the star that he is, because, I mean, when they're bringing in people like, you know, Drew McIntyre, they're putting him in NXT, even though he was on the main roster and held, you know, like he was in a prominent place on the main roster, not necessarily when he left being in 3MB, but he had prominent roles on the main roster before and they still started him in NXT. So I don't know. Where would you see EC3 going?
If I, should I do this? Yeah, fuck it. I'll do it. So, I ended up having a few years ago, I had a conversation with Mick Foley in confidence. So this is our little secret, you guys. But we were talking about this, though, it was whenever AJ Styles was debuting at the Royal Rumble. And
debuting him on the main roster was 100% the right decision, obviously.
Yes. It obviously was. And I think that he felt like a bigger star because of it. It felt like he didn't need to go through the quote-unquote minor leagues. Mm-hmm. But I proposed the question to Mick, and I said, is it something that we have these days to where we constantly bring these guys to NXT to debut? And we send them through the ranks, and by the time, it's not like it's a territory. And that gets a lot of confusion these days, is it's like, well, this guy, you know, Nakamura wore out his welcome in NXT because, you know, he was on top for so long. And so now he can go to WWE. See, the problem is the same people who were watching him in NXT are the same people who are watching him on WWE. So he comes up and we're already kind of tired of seeing him constantly. And it's sort of like the love affair is gone, so to say. The honeymoon is over with the particular person that they bring up. And so I asked Mick, I said, you know, is this something that the WWE should benefit more from? Because at the time I was just all in on AJ coming up to the main roster right away. Mm-hmm. And he stated that he doesn't know if he could have gotten over and had a successful career if NXT existed back whenever he was wrestling, because the way that it was set up was he came in and his first feud was with The Undertaker. Right out of the gate, Mankind was a top star. And what would happen if instead of that, he was in NXT for a year and everyone had already seen him? He had been overexposed to that point. Would he even get into a program with The Undertaker? And if so, would it even last as long as it did? As he was back in the mid-90s with The Undertaker. I mean, he was arguably The Undertaker's greatest feud of all time. And would that even exist if people were already bored and done with him by the time he got called up to the main roster? So in Mick's eyes, he would have never been that successful with a NXT situation, as it were. So, and I think that it hinders a whole lot of the guys. If you were to pinpoint to me one prime example of a guy going through NXT and being overexposed and then thrust into the spotlight and sort of floundering with not much to do, I would obviously go with Nakamura. That's the most obvious example. Nakamura is the type of guy, if you would have had him and Sami Zayn debut on the main roster together and have that match at WrestleMania instead of the TakeOver, something of that nature, man, oh man, they would have just blown the doors straight off, and it would have never been the same for either guy. It would have really been a moment to make them on the main roster. So,
do you think it's because they're overexposed in NXT, or do you think it's because they're presented in a certain way in NXT, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't? I mean, with Nakamura as an example, I wasn't as super into Nakamura as a lot of people were, just because he was the guy who came in, was important somewhere else, won, and just was champion for a while, which isn't something that necessarily thrills me as a story, right?
Right.
But then the presentation of someone on the main roster seems so different to their presentation in NXT. I mean, you look no further than Bayley for someone who thrived in the NXT environment and then got to the main roster and became kind of just a terrible person, main roster babyface, and now is doing essentially nothing, which is the biggest bummer for me because she's still my favorite. But I think it's an interesting perspective for sure. And I think overexposure is definitely a problem, but I don't know if that's a fault of NXT as a system or just all of the programming that WWE has now, because there is definitely something to be said for debuting someone on the main roster as a surprise, as a new thing. But I don't think the NXT audience and the Raw audience are the same. I think there's a portion of the Raw audience that is also watching NXT, but a good deal of the Raw audience doesn't watch NXT and hasn't seen these people before. So I think maybe striking that balance is part of the tricky thing.
Possibly. I would say, though, no matter what, the type of people who pay good money to travel and go to WrestleMania and everything else, I think that those people definitely do keep up with NXT. And at the very least, they're like me and they watch all the big shows in NXT. So the long answer to your very simple question is EC3 needs to be in the Royal Rumble, debuting on the main roster. He does not need to go to NXT.
I mean, and that's 100% my preference, and I would love it if he debuted in the Royal Rumble and then came to SmackDown, because, yeah, I want him on SmackDown. And, you know, if he actually used the fact that he was there before and used that as part of his character motivation, whatever they're going to call him, I don't know what name they're going to have him use, but they probably shouldn't have him use Derek Bateman again, but maybe they would?
No.
I mean, they probably shouldn't.
He needs to be EC3.
Can he be EC3, though? Are they going to let him do that?
Yes, they would absolutely let him do that. That was Ed Nordholm's new measure.
No, I mean, WWE going to let him do that?
Oh, I thought you meant with Impact.
No, because I know Impact has actually given the rights to the wrestlers to use their characters because they know they're a sinking ship and just can't be bothered anymore, it seems.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if WWE is going to want to use EC3 as a character because, you know, when it comes to AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, or some of the other guys that they've let use their own names, yeah, it's a gimmick that got over somewhere else, but EC3 seems more gimmicky than they do, I guess, just because he was such a TNA creation, and, you know, it's Ethan Carter III, which is a direct reference to Dixie Carter.
Right. I honestly think they would, because he managed to become a name, and he managed to become popular on his own. Mm-hmm. And I think Vince would respect that. So that's my honest opinion. I think that whenever we see him, he will be Ethan Carter III. And
I mean,
you just don't
so.
Have to
I
reference who the Carter is. Yeah, you
true.
Just don't have to reference who the Carter is. Or just make up a new Carter. They'll fucking do that.
They can totally rewrite history. And in this case, I'd be okay with it. And I just want the best for EC3 because he is one of my very favorite performers, has been for since I started watching wrestling, essentially.
Yeah, no.
So yeah, I guess we'll see about that. I don't know. Things could be kind of exciting. But I guess it's time to get into SmackDown now. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready for it, Sandra. Let's do this. I am excited for SmackDown. Show me some Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn matches.
I mean, I would if they had appeared on this show. However, this was such a weird episode of SmackDown, wasn't it? Because it's one of those episodes that was set up because the matches that happened, except for the women's tag, which just makes me want to bang my head against a wall. But other than the women's tag, all of the matches on this show had stakes. Like, they had a reason for being, because it was all focused on the United States tournament, the United States title tournament. And I feel like for a show where there were stakes and the stakes were high, you know, the United States title is a prestigious prize, not a lot happened on this show. I don't know how you felt about it. I got done with it and was like, oh, so that's done now, I guess.
Yeah, this, you know, it's funny though, Sandra, I love tournaments.
Me too.
And I love tournaments for titles. I feel like this was the worst tournament WWE's done since that revival of the King of the Ring that they tried to bring back.
Oh, the one where it was Adrian Neville versus Wade Barrett?
Yeah.
But
they buried it on the network and nobody really cared.
They basically told you this does not matter and it is for nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then made Wade Barrett wear a crown.
Yeah. Because, you know, the fucking bad news thing was getting over. So why not kill that?
They had to kill it.
Yeah, why not kill that? Oh, this
is too popular. People are having too much fun. We can't have that.
Yeah. Oh, this has potential to make money. Blew! Throw it down the toilet and flush it. So, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's what they're doing with Fashion Files right now, too, since they've taken that off of television. And I feel like that's what they're doing with, I don't know, there's a lot. We'll get
Sandra, do you know what this episode of SmackDown could have used?
I mean, a lot of things, but what are you thinking?
Personality.
Yes.
This thing was devoid of personality, right? Like,
it really was. And it's not even that I thought it was terrible. It just felt like nothing.
Yeah. Like, a lot happened on it in terms of, like, the title, but did anything really happen on it? Because I can't really find it within me to care that much.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, I guess we'll go through the non-events of the show, and we'll see if we find anything that happened that we kind of forgot about, but I don't know, as I'm scrolling through the results, I'm not so sure, but this show opened up and we go straight to the ring, right? And I was kind of excited. I thought, oh, they're introducing the New Day right to begin, so we're actually going to start with a match and not a super long promo. I should have known better because of the
New Day.
So, you know, but the New Day make their entrance and they come to the ring and there's a podium set up in the ring because Xavier Woods, I don't know if you've seen it on social media, but he's been doing this sort of campaign against his opponents. Like he was campaigning against Aiden English when he was going to be facing Aiden English in the tournament, which I thought was super fun because he and Aiden English were going back and forth quite a bit on Twitter, and I follow both of them, so I saw all their interactions and campaign videos that they made on social media, because the promos on Twitter are so much better than the promos that they actually air on SmackDown. It's absolutely baffling to me. But so Xavier Woods comes out to the podium with Biggie Langston and Kofi Kingston, obviously. And he's about to make a speech. And I don't know, they talk about America and Kofi talks about freedom in the United States and it's on the line. And I don't know why they mention Home Alone, but they do. Oh, because, that's what it was, is that the best things come in threes, right? And so they mention some examples and then Biggie Langston, being dorky Biggie Langston, is like, and like Home Alone. Well, one and two and maybe not so much three, you know, no, not so much three. And then Xavier Woods says that Jinder Mahal hates Home Alone and he can't stand freedom. So clearly those are fighting words.
The crowd was clearly dead for it. And I was like, oh, really? Nothing?
I know. He was trying so hard. I mean, you know how I'm not a big go America person, right? And I think it's safe to say that you're not really go America yourself.
No, it's not that we
hate America. It's just
America has a lot of problems.
America has a lot of problems. We acknowledge them, and we're not the types to start USA chants for no reason when a brown person's in the ring. You know,
you're not.
we aren't those people. So speeches about America and whatever, those aren't necessarily going to appeal to people like you and me, even though we are American. But I do appreciate when the New Day makes America about pancakes.
Yes.
Because, you know, just like the ingredients of pancakes are strong on their own, America is stronger when we all come together or something. I don't remember the exact verbiage. And I still don't understand the pancake thing. Apparently it's just a thing they do now.
Yeah.
It's the New Day.
I would imagine that Vince McMahon was just like, no, you're making pancakes.
I think it was National Pancake Day or week at some point, and so they had pancakes for that one day and the pancakes kind of got over. So now they just have pancakes all the time.
Why not?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Bootio started too, right?
Yeah. It's kind of weird, but the other thing though that I liked about it was it was like a, it was a patriotic promo, but it was all very tongue in cheek.
Well, that's what I mean, is that this was an America promo that I feel like, oh yeah, I can get behind that because it's ridiculous and they know what they're doing. You know, they know that they're being absolutely ridiculous and they're not actually going out there John Cena style and going, but freedom.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 110% agree.
Yeah, so I quite prefer this to your standard John Cena 4th of July spiel, right? And it makes sense because they're fighting for the United States title. And, you know, they basically say Xavier, of course, is going to win because, of course, that's what he's going to say. And they're taking shots at Jinder Mahal and whatnot. And so, of course, who comes out next? The Singh brothers to introduce Jinder because his entrance is fantastic. Now, first of all, Jinder's entrance, they fucked up the lights. Did you notice this?
I did not, no.
So Jinder Mahal
I was too busy paying attention to how terrible the graphics were for Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, so there were two things about Jinder's entrance that I noticed. And the first one was that he came out and his music starts and, you know all the trons are working and everything, but he comes out and he's just on a black background for, I think, way too long. Like, and it didn't look very spectacular because normally he comes out and it's all colorful and amazing, right? And it took a while for it to kick in, which production glitches happen. But the more egregious thing to me is the little fax thing that they have when guys enter and then it says, you know, two fun facts, like for Natalia, say, you know, stars on E's Total Divas and, you know, former women's champion or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Queen of Hearts.
I know where you're going with this.
So, Jinder Mahal does have some accomplishments in WWE. One in particular, right? Like, he was the former WWE champion, and he was WWE champion for a good long while. I know, because I covered every single week of his reign, and it was painful. And I had to talk Kenny off a ledge many, many times. So we know this, right? Like, he was former WWE champion. And he has some other stuff that I'm sure would be fun facts about him.
Sure, as opposed to a couple of lies.
So, Jinder's fun facts are hometown, Punjab, India. Speaks both Punjabi and English. Now, he does speak some Punjabi. He does. Like, he might not speak it that well. You know, I say that I speak some Spanish. I'm not super fluent in Spanish, but that doesn't mean I don't speak it.
He speaks, I guess the best way to say it would be that he speaks Punjabi the way that I speak Japanese, which is like very, very broken and limited.
Right. Which, and I mean, I don't know because I don't speak Punjabi, so I can't, you know, I can't understand how bad or good it is.
Right.
But people who do speak the language have told us that it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe he's improving, maybe he's taking classes for it. He's a hard worker. I wouldn't put it past him. But just, even if he does speak Punjabi, like, those are pretty lame facts. Like, hometown Punjab, India, and speaks both Punjabi and English. If your hometown is Punjab, India, shouldn't you fucking speak the language of where you're from? It's just, I mean, that would be like, you know, if my hometown were Barcelona, Spain or something, and then it'd be like, oh, hometown, Barcelona, Spain. Speak Spanish. Well, duh. Like, if I grew up in Barcelona, then I really should speak Spanish, right? Like, I should. That's just, what? That's so stupid to me. So that just, yes. I don't know. That drove me crazy. And
no.
I shouldn't dwell on a graphic, but it drove me insane. I was like, and they didn't even mention he was a former WWE champion.
Yeah, yeah. The most important thing about the guy, the thing that they wasted all of our time with, and then they
the
can't even
The thing that made him
it.
Even remotely a star.
Yeah, I guess they're doing a better job forgetting about it than we are.
I guess so.
Jesus.
Which, I don't know. It was, that just baffled me. But I still like Jinder's entrance. I still like the Singh brothers quite a bit. I was really hoping for a lot of Singh brothers and New Day shenanigans in this match, and we really didn't get that much. I thought this match was okay. As far as Jinder matches go, it was fine, and it was bordering on good, I'll say, because Xavier Woods is excellent, and I do think, like, I'll give credit to Jinder Mahal. I think he has gotten better at wrestling. He's still not great at wrestling, but he has gotten better. It it's to the point where if Jinder Mahal is going to be in a match, I don't dread it with as much, you know, dread as I used to. It's sort of like, oh, okay, this is a match that's going to happen and it might be fine. And that's kind of what this was. Like, there were some fun spots and they tried to build some drama, but Jinder's very slow and methodical and not the most exciting. And they had opportunity for shenanigans with Big E and Kofi on the outside and the Singh brothers on the outside. But really all we got between those two teams were Kofi and Big E threatening the guys with pancakes at one point, which I don't know how that's super threatening, but they were going to throw pancakes at them. And then when the Singh brothers got up on the apron near the end of the match, New Day kind of ran into the ring and Corey Graves was yelling, "They should be disqualified! Disqualify the New Day right now!" Because he was so upset that the New Day got into the ring to run off the Singh brothers, because he's very anti-New Day and very pro-gender. And the Singh brothers just sort of ran away from the New Day, and the New Day didn't even come back to ringside. They just all went to the back. And then Jinder Mahal won with the Colossus, because Xavier Woods missed an elbow drop. And then Xavier, like, threw him into the rope, kind of.
Yeah, it was you know, there was a spot actually a little bit earlier than this. And it was just like, I was starting to warm up to Jinder, and I was like, oh, I guess Jinder is getting a little bit better. Then he did this spot, and it just immediately flushed all those positive feelings down the toilet for me. I was like, nope, never mind. I take it back. They were up. It was Jinder on the second rope, and Xavier was also up there, and he was going to do a move to Xavier at some point. Xavier, like, hits him to where he's supposed to fall off, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
He doesn't fall off, though. He literally, like, pauses and leaps backwards and takes this just cartoonish bump. And it's so obvious that Jim Cornette had a really good way to describe a bump like this whenever people would dive through furniture in ECW, you know, go through tables and everything. He would go, you always see these guys and, like, somebody punches them and then they look back to see where the furniture is and then they just fucking take a leap of faith through the furniture. And that was like what Jinder did here, but he did it without the furniture. There was like this big pause, like he forgot to jump, or it was very sloppy and it reminded me of a bump that like Vince or Shane would have taken in 1999.
It reminds me of a bump of someone who hasn't been in the wrestling business very long and is just learning to wrestle.
Yeah, exactly. It's for a guy like Shane or Vince back then, it would have been passable. But for a guy who has had your championship title, it's a little embarrassing.
And has been doing this for years.
Many years prior to holding that title. So it's flat out inexcusable not to know how to take
that. It's not the only super awkward Jinder spot of the night. Like, there are a few. I think he's, like I said, he's gotten better. That doesn't mean that he's gotten great. And there's one bit where it's basically to set up the end of the match. And it did make me gasp a little bit, because he throws Xavier Woods so that Xavier Woods is basically going to slide under the rope. But it looks like Xavier's chin hits the rope or something. And, like, the rope was bouncing like crazy, and this kind of sets up the end, because they say, oh, Xavier, you know, he got himself choked on the rope. And whether that was intentional or not, it looked like it was, because it fed into the finish of the match. But it still looked kind of dangerous. I don't know. It just reminded me almost a little too much of when Enzo Amore got his head conked in kind of a similar spot when he was going under a rope and got caught.
Yeah, definitely.
It just, I don't know, it made me a little like, ooh, I hope he's okay. But it seemed like he was, because the ref went to check on him a little bit, and Jinder just kind of stalled and was yelling for no reason. And then, you know, he kind of rolled Xavier back in and hit him with the Colossus and won. And you know, and I expected Jinder Mahal to win the whole thing. So I expected Jinder Mahal to win here. It wasn't that much of a surprise. It was just kind of like, okay, yeah, I did expect that to win. It was what it was. It wasn't a bad match. It wasn't a great match. I would have preferred Xavier just in terms of match potential and in terms of who I like more. but I kind of understood Jinder going through, and they were playing up the whole time too that it would have been an upset if Xavier Woods had won, because he's going up against Jinder Mahal, former WWE champion, who, you know, beat the likes of Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura. And I don't know if they even really mentioned that, come to think of it, on commentary. I don't know if they were calling out those names. I don't remember it being called out, but I guess that's just what we're supposed to think about it.
Yeah, I have not a clue. Like, I feel like their planning with the whole gender thing is kind of up in arms. Like, it never really went anywhere or had a big payoff, and now that it's coming down, they don't know what to do with it. It's sort of like nuclear waste, you know what I mean?
Right.
it's like, you know, we have all these power plants, and once they shut down, they don't really know what to do with them. So, you know, it's just all like, oh, you know, we have all these missile silos that have all these nukes in them, and we're busy making new, more powerful nukes, and we're never going to use these. So what do? They're just going to collect dust, I guess.
We'll deal with that later. We'll deal with it later.
Yeah, exactly.
And hope we don't all blow up in the process.
Right. Yeah, they treat the fallout from gender, half pun intended, like nuclear waste. So yeah, there you go.
I mean, state of gender skin, it looks like he might have been exposed to something.
It's great whenever he comes on the screen because Val just goes, look at his tits!
His tits are incredibly distracting. Yeah. Like, yeah, they are. They're more distracting than Baron Corbin's belly button.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
I think. God. Like, I think the tits are worse. The way they're just kind of hanging off. Like, it's not good. It's not great. Yeah. It's not a pretty sight. Actually, speaking of Baron Corbin, he had a promo next.
Oh, God. This.
Because he was the first of a long line of Royal Rumble promos on this episode.
Now, oh, fuck me.
I have a lot of things to say about these. I mean, not a lot of things. Just basically, I fucking hated these promos, David. And from your reaction, it sounds like you hated these promos, too.
How bad were these things, man?
Like, they were terrible.
How difficult is it to find a fucking camera? You know, fucking on Raw the night before, 24 hours before this, they go, the production trucks, those are worth $12 million. They're the same fucking production trucks that are at SmackDown. Why is everybody recording on a goddamn flip phone?
Find someone to hold your phone. There are security people. There are production people. There are, I assume, catering staff. I mean, all of the extras.
Why are they holding on the phone anyway? Do you have all these cameras? All these sophisticated cameras, Sandra.
I mean, maybe some of them got damaged by Braun Strowman, and we're pretending that they don't have separate cameras, and maybe that's part of it. But, I mean, there should be enough people around that you can find someone to hold your camera for 30 seconds. You're clearly at work. There are clearly lots of people around for the production of a Raw or a SmackDown, as we saw last night on Raw when, you know, Braun Strowman had tons and tons of extras that he was hassling and throwing into things and whatnot. So yeah, find one of those guys and have them hold your phone if you have to record a thing on a phone. What I think they're doing is they're trying to make it seem spontaneous, or make it seem like all of the promos that are being cut on social media that have been fantastic, like the ones that Angry Mojo Rawley has been cutting, or when Becky Lynch is in her car talking about how she's gonna win a thing, or, you know, like a lot of those promos are pretty good. But why don't you just show us those? Why do you have them in front of backdrops at work, clearly at work, holding their own phones to record themselves at weird angles? This Baron Corbin one, it was like, I don't know, it was straight up his nose, this promo was. I don't know if he was trying to make himself look taller. It wasn't working. Like, no, I mean, I don't know if he was just trying to downplay the hairline. He was like, make it sure it's as low as, but I don't need to see up your nose, dude. It wasn't good. I mean, the promo was fine. The promo itself, I don't know. He said he was, I don't even remember what he said. Something about he will win.
Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't like it, but I think that Baron Corbin's promos are always pretty forced. I loved him on Talking Smack. I thought he did great on there, but In terms of a promo, it's always the same thing, you know? Have you listened to the Talk is Jericho podcast with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens yet?
I have not.
They were teaming. They were at a house show that night, and they were teaming with the Lone Wolf. And all they did was make fun of it because, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, the Lone Wolf is the third wheel.
That's great. I really should listen to that because I bet it's a lot of fun. I love this guy's, obviously.
you will. There is a story about. All I'll say is the premise. There's a story about Sami Zayn going hiking with Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad and BoJack Horseman fame.
Oh boy!
In Iceland. So that's I'll just leave it right there, and it has an excellent, hilarious payoff in the end too.
Whenever I may have to listen to that tonight because that sounds pretty excellent. Actually, I'm pretty excited about that.
It's like an hour and a half of just unadulterated bliss. I highly recommend it. But
cool.
But yeah,
that sounds excellent. I mean, and then after Baron Corbin's promo. So notice Baron Corbin's promo all by his lonesome, lone wolf promo. One guy. You know, out in the ether by himself. That'll come up later. So the announcers talk about the Riot Squad versus Charlotte Flair, Naomi, and Becky Lynch coming up, and I resist every urge to bang my head into the wall when I hear that another six-woman tag is happening for no reason. We hear that Bill Goldberg is going into the Hall of Fame. We talked about that yesterday. And then the announcers plug the two-on-one handicap match for the WWE title at the Royal Rumble. At this point, you think maybe we'll hear from the participants of the two-on-one handicap match for the Royal Rumble. And we do hear from one of them. AJ Styles is backstage, and he talks to Renee Young. Basically, he says kind of similar things to what he's been saying, right? The match against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn isn't really fair, but he's not worried. He's going to get a win. And he mocks them about... what did he say? He said something like, it's 3-on-1 because he counts Kevin Owens as two people, so he had to get a fat joke in there, which I was just kind of like, okay, AJ, I think you're better than that, but whatever. And so that kind of made me roll my eyes. But he said, you know, they're always together. They're like the same person. Kevin and Sammy. Sammy and Kevin. Cammy and Sam. Oh, did I say a Cammy? I'm going to just call him Cammy now. Like, that was the biggest insult in the world. And I really didn't think it hit all that well.
Yeah, no. Big time miss there. What happened?
I don't know. It was not one of AJ Styles' better efforts, I don't think. And he was like, this yet movement? What about nope? And none of it was just great, but, you know, yeah. I mean, he ended it strong enough, saying that they're not facing just anyone at the Royal Rumble. They're stepping into the ring with the WWE champion, and he's like, this isn't the Cammy show, this is SmackDown, the house that AJ Styles built. And it wasn't long, and it wasn't super, super terrible, but it was not one of my favorite AJ Styles promos. I don't know what you thought.
It missed on every cylinder. AJ looked like a bad comedian at open mic night.
Yeah, no, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
And okay, so speaking of bad promos, David, here is my least favorite part of the show. So there's a video package that happens next, and it's all of the women on SmackDown talking about the Royal Rumble, right?
Oh, no.
This was terrible. I mean, we just talked about how much we don't like the production aspect of all of the promos that were done, and this was the same thing as the Baron Corbin one, with all the women holding a phone, clearly filming selfie style. But did you notice they put the woman's name in block font with silence, and then there were a few seconds of promo. Like Ruby Riott said, you know, Riott's my name and Rumble's my game, and she will win or something. I mean, I have heard so many good Heidi Lovelace promos and even Ruby Riott promos in NXT, and I don't know what has happened to her. Why is she reduced to this terrible person? I don't understand. Like, she's trying to be menacing, and she can be menacing enough if she wants to be, but this was terrible. And Becky Lynch's, I thought, was probably the best because she spoke more like a human than the rest of them. Sarah Logan looked like she was terrified of the camera. Because, I don't know, something about being surrounded by wolves or something because she's from Kentucky.
Okay, so Val has a new gimmick for her, okay? So instead of, you know, she's the lone wolf part two or whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
So Val
in
wants
a team
her,
of three for no reason.
Sure, yeah, whatever. Val wants her to be raised by wolves. And she wants her to think that she is to actually be a wolf or even a werewolf.
Like
this
Chris
point.
Wolf in Japan?
Yeah. Sure. This needs to be like a thing, though, to where like she comes out and she's using her hind legs to scratch her ears and the whole nine yards. It needs to go full fledged wolf on this, you guys. This is what needs to happen, because as is, what the fuck is going on here?
No idea. I mean, she indicated that she was raised around wolves or had been around wolves.
No, no,
or
no. She needs to be raised by wolves. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah. No, if she went crazy full on, I was raised by wolves and am an actual wolf, I would be all in on Sarah Logan.
Yes.
Sarah Logan. As it is now, sure. She always looks terrified when she's speaking. And Liv Morgan said something about how she will live forever, which is hilarious. Her name's Liv. This was so bad. Tamina said that she will make people fly when she throws them over the top rope and wins. Just in case we didn't understand what she meant.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah. In case you didn't get it.
Naomi amazingly said that people would feel the glow. Natalia said that she was the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. What is this? Why are they so reduced to one sentence? And not only that, but all of the women had the same block font, the same 10 seconds, the same everything, right? And that really, really pissed me off because they were just all in the middle of the show, all together, all run together in just this, you know, this one video package, right? And this is so indicative of how SmackDown is treating the women's division right now. Because later on in the show, you know, we saw Baron Corbin earlier. Like I said, his promo was alone. Later on in the show, we see one from Randy Orton. Boo Randy Orton, right? But he has his own font and he has his own promo. And then separate from that, you see a promo from Shinsuke Nakamura. Alone, separate, with a different font to Randy Orton. Because they were close enough in the show that I was noticing the fonts. And I was like, why? Why are all of the women just being shoved together with one uniform font with no individuality whatsoever? I mean, these promos, the purpose of these promos, I love a good pre-Royal Rumble promo, right? Because it gives people a few seconds to get over their character, get what they're about, make an emphatic statement, and be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm gonna win the Royal Rumble. Oh, excuse me, the Royal Rumble match. Not the Royal Rumble event, David. The Royal Rumble match is what they're going
the
to be winning.
Yeah, you know, they might win the event versus winning the match.
I mean, you'd hate to do that. You would absolutely hate to win the whole event. That would just be embarrassing the next day trying to explain it.
It really would. Sandra, my question for you is, how the fuck did Kevin Dunn approve this? This looked like something that a Full Sail student who would get an F would propose as a deal.
I just don't understand. I don't understand at all. I feel like they were going for spontaneous and they were going for, you know, different production value. Well, your production value was shite. Just throw this in the toilet. I mean, it almost seemed like they ran out of time before the show or something and were like, oh shit, we need promos about the Royal Rumble to fill some time on this show for some reason, even though we put the fashion files online and don't put them on the show, which makes absolutely no sense. But we need promos to fill time on the show and remind everyone that there's a Royal Rumble event and match. And then they were like, oh, but we don't actually have time to do anything about that. We only have half an hour. Everyone grab your phones, go find a different corner of the building, record a promo, send it via email. We'll cut it together real quick and bada bing, bada boom. That's what they did. That's how this felt. It was shoddy. It was terrible. I didn't like it. Nobody really looked good coming out of it. I mean, I get what they were going for. It was a big miss for me. I really didn't like it. And I especially didn't like all the women being shoved together because that's how SmackDown treats their women's division and not like individual people. And this made me so angry. Probably more angry than it should have.
This made me furious, and I thought it was the worst part of WWE television this week on Raw or SmackDown for those very reasons. It absolutely demoralized the women's division, made it a mockery, in my opinion. This was just a huge misstep, a big misfire. If they were going to do this, Sandra, it's not like this is the fucking lead-in, right? You know, it's like, you could have panned this out over the course of numerous weeks. It didn't have to be like, here's literally every woman we've got, and go out there and say a thing about yourself. This could have been, you know, you sprinkle in three here like they're doing with the men. Exactly what they're doing with the men. Sprinkle in three here, sprinkle in three the next week, sprinkle in the three after that. You could easily do something like that the way that they're doing with the men, and it would have made a lot more sense. And you would have had more time to come up with some individuality for your fucking graphics. That was just, that was embarrassing. That looked like something that should have been on Tout instead of the USA Network.
It did look like Tout. Maybe Daniel Bryan was trying to evoke the spirit of Tout, but they really should have called that out if that was the goal. Oh my gosh, it definitely looked like Tout. And did you notice, I mean, the women even got a way less time than the men did for the promos.
Yeah, no, they did.
That was super frustrating. What would have made more sense? I mean, like you say, sprinkling them throughout weeks and whatnot makes a lot more sense. What they could have done is have Carmella and Lana and Tamina and Natalia do those promos today, or maybe not even all of them, but some of them, because they weren't appearing on the show in a match.
Right.
And then next week, if other women are featured on the show, they could insert other promos from like Becky Lynch or Charlotte or whoever else is not involved in the other goings on, right? Don't just treat your women's division like you need one segment and that's it, and everyone can just be thrown together, and that's what drives me crazy about SmackDown right now.
Well, we got everybody on the program. It's like,
yeah, that's great, but when they're all flat, one-dimensional characters, who cares?
Exactly. No one gives a shit, which is another reason I hate these six-woman tags. Ugh.
Oh, they're so infuriating. We'll definitely get to that. Up next, though, we have the United States title tournament match between Bobby Roode and Mojo Rawley. And Bobby Roode does his full glorious entrance. And I was going to bring this up to you, David. I am starting to think that Bobby Roode's song has become more of a hindrance than a help to him. And I don't know what you think about that, but I feel like since he came to the main roster, all he does is say glorious, and that he can't really rise above that.
Yeah.
That he's just stuck being a flat one-dimensional character and doesn't have anything else, and maybe can't have anything else because he's just reduced to that one word. I don't know. Like, should he try and change the song? Should he? I mean, ideally, I guess there would be better writing and he would become a better character, and maybe that will happen given the fact that he's champion now.
Yeah, yeah.
But barring, you know, miracles,
Sandra,
I don't know.
Sandra, everybody wants Bray Wyatt to change his character, despite the fact that he is one of the best original characters that the WWE has created in the past decade. A lot of people want Bobby Roode to change his music, despite that it's one of the best songs that has been created in WWE in the post-Jim Johnson era. This is just one of another instance of this, to where they have a surefire thing, and it's almost like someone in the office has a bet going on to see how well they can fuck it all up. And
see, for me, it just feels like in Tommy Boy, you know, when he's like, and I have a pet and I love it and I pet it and I rip it apart. And then he like rips apart the roll and makes it terrible. That's what they do.
Yeah.
It's like Matt Hardy and the laughing, Bobby Roode and the glorious, you know, that's just how I feel about it. And it's such a bummer because Bobby Roode was super charismatic when he came into NXT. He's never been the most exciting wrestler to me, but his character was fantastic and he cut great promos. And now he just is like, but I'm glorious.
Yeah, it's so infuriating too, because like he can do really good stick work. You know, I mean, that was that was his forte in TNA. And it's just so infuriating because it's such a surefire thing and nothing is can't miss anymore. You know, the phrase common sense isn't common. That's
right.
That absolutely applies to WWE creative, because
this
would be common sense for him to knock this out of the park. And instead it's just become handcuffs or shackles. This guy. And
it's a big problem when Mojo Rawley is the most important person in Bobby Roode versus Mojo Rawley. And I'm not saying that to throw shade at Mojo Rawley, because I really quite like angry Mojo Rawley right now. I think some of his trash talking in this match, when he was like, did I crack your ribs, Bobby? Did I crack your ribs? And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Angry Mojo's kind of my jam. Kind of really super into angry Mojo. I was a big fan of what he was doing with Zack Ryder. And I mean, the wrestling part of this was not the best.
Yeah.
I think this might be one of the first times we've seen Mojo Rawley actually try to wrestle instead of just run into people and knock them down.
Yeah.
Because we don't see Mojo in that many singles matches. And when he was with Ryder, they had a lot of chances to kind of work on that stuff. And they had kind of a system going. And we haven't seen Mojo Rawley in singles competition that much against other opponents. So some of this looked really sloppy. Like, there was an elbow to Bobby Roode's head where it kind of looked like he clocked him. I couldn't tell for sure, but it kind of looked that way. And I don't know, parts where Mojo Rawley looked almost like he was tripping over Bobby Roode a little. And it added some legitimacy, I guess, because they were like, well, nothing Mojo does is going to be pretty. You know, he's going to be a football man and run at you and just try to clobber you because he's super, super angry. And that part of it worked, that, you know, I guess maybe he's not supposed to look super polished. He's just angry and will kill you.
You know what his issue is, though? It's ring awareness.
Right.
That's his big glaring omission when it comes to his skill set. And I hope he can get there. Unlike Kenny, I actually like Mojo. I think that Mojo is a solid competitor, but something that Val mentioned too, and it's a great point. Very rarely does it work whenever the ex-football guy comes into wrestling and uses football tackles and all this other crap that they would use on the football field. Like, I can only mm-hmm. think of one instance where it's really gotten over to the point to where it's become like a money-making ordeal, and that would be with Bill Goldberg, obviously.
Right.
But it's like, oh, man, this is kind of tricky whenever you do that, because so many guys, Ernie Ladd and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and so many guys, Steve McMichael, so many guys have come in with these football tackles and everything, and they do it a lot better than Mojo does.
Right.
So I think Mojo needs to kind of let that go by the wayside and kind of develop something new for him, and something that requires less ring awareness than a football tackle.
yeah, because, no, you're right. When you say ring awareness, I mean, he just doesn't seem to be all that spatially aware of things around him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this match, again, it wasn't the greatest match. It wasn't terrible. It was there. Like, I wouldn't say that it was painful to watch or anything, but right. I don't really remember much of what happened other than a few spots looking kind of like, eesh, what is Mojo doing right
yeah.
now?
The majority of the match.
He seems to not really be harnessing that spazzy energy. But in the end, Bobby Roode definitely does win with the Glorious DDT, hits Mojo with a spine buster, and then hits the Glorious DDT to win. And so he pins Mojo Rawley, which is kind of what I figured would happen.
Yeah.
The idea of a final between Bobby Roode and Jinder Mahal didn't really thrill me that much. I don't think that Mojo Rawley versus Jinder Mahal would have been any better. It might have been more interesting in a car crash sense. But,
yeah.
Like, I was almost hoping for Mojo Rawley versus Jinder Mahal just to see what would happen, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just to see how bad it was.
I almost feel like this is going to be one of those deals. Well, I suppose we'll get into that in the final. So I'll hold that thought until we get to the final.
Yeah, because, I mean, after the match, the Singh brothers come out to attack Bobby Roode because, you know, they want to soften him up for next week. His title match with Jinder Mahal next week, right? It's supposed to be next week. So Bobby Roode, stupid man of the universe, gets on the mic, and because, you know, Jinder Mahal says something to him. I don't remember what all he said, but he was like, "You something about a glorious charade, and next week I'm going to become the United States champion," and whatever. And Jinder's gotten a lot better on the microphone, so I don't mind as much when he speaks now. But Bobby Roode looks angry, and he calls for a microphone. And I was like, is Bobby Roode going to get some character development? And in a way, he kind of does, because we find out that he's not a very intelligent man, because after being beaten up and having rib injuries and, you know, just going through this grueling match with Mojo Rawley and being beaten up by the Singh brothers, he says, we don't have to wait until next week. We can do this tonight. Now, I understand being valiant. I do.
Sure.
But that's a dumb move. That's
yeah.
not a good choice.
No, definitely not. And then Jinder gets on the stick and says, no, we'll do this on my terms. We'll do it whenever I determine.
Or the terms that were prearranged already, because the match was supposed to happen next week.
But why? Why after the match? Because Jinder was in better condition following his match.
Yes.
Than Bobby Roode was, and the Singh brothers attacked Bobby Roode and did further damage. Jinder didn't want to fight Bobby Roode?
You make a good point. Wouldn't it make more sense for him to want to fight Bobby Roode right then immediately and not
yeah.
give Bobby Roode a chance to come back? Because Jinder's
yeah.
had a chance to rest. Bobby Roode hasn't had a chance to rest.
Right.
Yeah, none of this made sense. But Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan's booking philosophy as of late is see a thing and make a decision. Based on that
yes.
thing that I'm seeing right now, like a shiny thing flies by and Daniel's like, oh, great idea for a match, right? And so Daniel Bryan comes out and announces that that match will indeed take place tonight. And people are chanting, yes, 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 of course, because they want to see a title match and they weren't expecting it. So it was exciting. I mean,
of
the
course.
Crowd was pretty into the idea of getting the final instead of having to wait and not see it live. So
yeah.
I can definitely understand that. We come back from the break, and then they hype the Mixed Match Challenge a little bit, and then they show Randy Orton's video, which he filmed in the ring, and he got, like, way longer than everyone else, I assume just because he speaks slowly and over-explains everything and is so dull that maybe...
And also filled the last 30 seconds of the video with great silence. and panned around
silence
the ring to
and
show,
spinning around.
Yeah, to show that he was in an empty ring and an empty arena. I'm like, couldn't you have done that while you were talking? And Val's like, shut up, he can't do two things at once.
Accurate. I mean, was it supposed to be atmosphere? Like, I scared all the people out of the arena. No one wants to see me. I mean, I understand why no one wants to see him.
Yeah.
Hey, I was pleased that this was all we saw of him on the show.
Hometown, supposed hometown. He grew up out in the suburbs where everything's safe. Yet he bills himself from St. Louis. The motherfucker lives an hour away, but he bills himself from St. Louis. So I am from his fucking hometown. And whenever he wrestles here, I get up and go take a piss. So there's that.
Yep. I mean, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
Yep.
And I mean, he talks about winning the Royal Rumble and how he's going to main event WrestleMania 34. And he will not. At least he better not, because boo. Yep. And then we come to the six-woman tag. Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, and Naomi versus the Riot Squad. Don't really know why. I mean, we're still talking about how it's because the Riot Squad attacked these ladies when they came on the scene, which is good motivation for a match. A match, or two, or a program with some sort of goal or payoff or reason for existing. But no. It's just all the women against each other. Because of course it is. And it's been that way for a while. And, you know, I wanted to bring this up because Ruby Riott actually put on her Instagram, she had this thing that she posted, and I'm trying to bring it up right now, but my phone's freezing. She said, you know, people may look at us and see a random group of girls who came up together from NXT, but that's not the case. This wasn't an accident. We have never been handed anything in life. We formed a bond by knowing what it's like to struggle. Having done most of this journey alone, we came together to take what was never handed to us. Now, that's all well and good in theory, David.
Sure.
But she doesn't actually say why. Like, she doesn't say what they're trying to achieve. Are they trying to achieve the championship? Because if they're trying to achieve the championship, then these six-woman tags still don't make any sense because they're doing that by entering the Royal Rumble, right?
Yeah.
And she's saying how, you know, they've struggled and they've never been handed anything. And that was kind of Ruby Riott's deal in NXT, was, you know, she was the scrappy underdog and working her way up and a charismatic, natural babyface. So, of course, they brought her up as a heel. And Liv Morgan, we didn't really ever get much character development from Liv Morgan. Like, she had some matches. She fought the Iconic Duo before, right? That's kind of it. Sarah Logan,
yeah,
really didn't see in NXT except for being a jobber in a couple matches. And she was great in the Mae Young Classic. Loved her in the Mae Young Classic, but I didn't really get, like, I'm scratching and clawing and, you know, the three of them weren't attacked or brought down or anything like that. It was just, now they're together. So I feel like even with posts like that, I just feel like, why are you here? What exactly is your goal? And what are you trying to accomplish here? You know, they're not still going around and attacking Becky Lynch backstage. They're not, I mean, maybe they are, I don't know, but they're not, I don't know. It just seems like without any discernible goal, these matches are just matches. And the match is fine.
You are going to absolutely love that Kevin Owens podcast, the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn podcast with Jericho, because he actually mentions this trio and why it makes no sense and how it drives him nuts. So,
I really do need to listen to that tonight,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. He has a full tangent about it, and he goes off on a rant about how it makes no sense. So, yeah. I highly recommend it, and that's kind of my thoughts, actually, the Kevin Owens thing. So, that's a little plug for a friend of the show, Chris Jericho. Go over and listen to his new podcast on the Westwood One podcast syndicate. So, there you go.
Yeah, I will definitely have to check that out. I mean, and the match, the problem for me that breaks my heart is that I love Ruby Riott so much.
Yeah.
Just as a performer, and it drives me crazy that this is what we're getting from her.
Of course.
I mean, in the end, Liv Morgan pins, who does she pin again? Oh, she pins Naomi.
She pins Naomi, yeah.
You know, Naomi has pinned Sarah Logan before, and Ruby Riott has submitted to Becky Lynch, and also Ruby Riott's pinned Charlotte. It's just an exercise in frustration. I'm tired of talking about it, which is
it really is
not helpful.
It's just spinning the tires and slowly removing the tread on the tires that makes up the individuality of the performers who are placed within the match.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I feel like I say it before every pay-per-view now. Maybe once we get past the Rumble, things will happen. I can only dream, right, yeah. David? I can only dream, because obviously building toward a match where all of the women are in it, we're not going to get any individual stories until the 28th. So maybe after the Rumble, maybe some stories will come out of the Rumble. That's my hope, is, you know, the Rumble can set up individual stories. So just, I mean, whose door do I need to bang on to be like, no, please listen to me, women or people? but I mean, other than Dasha Fuentes, the robot, who's backstage with the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, in the next segment.
Good segue.
Oh, thank you. And so she's asking the Usos about the 2 out of 3 falls match against Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. By the way, so excited for that match.
It's going to steal the show.
I think it really, really has a chance to. And you know, the Usos are not too high on Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. They call them chumps. They basically say that they will win. But Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, dastardly heels that they are, who are starting to grow a personality, decide to come and attack the Usos from behind and beat them down and kind of leave them laying. You know, they taunt them and they call them, what was it? Because the Usos said something about not knowing their names and, you know, how Jason Jordan was doing great things on Raw and Chad Gable's just kind of still here and blah, 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 blah. And how they didn't know which Uso was which. And then the Usos did this weird bit where they were like, I'm Jimmy and you're Jay. And they're like, oh, no, I'm Jimmy and you're Jay. And like, they didn't know which one was which between the two of them, which was kind of funny, but also weird. And
then a little awkward, you know, there.
It kind of was. And then Gable and Benjamin taunt the Usos and say, oh, and we know exactly who you are. And they point to one Uso and say former, and the other Uso and they say champions.
Now, see,
former champions.
Now, see, I thought one of them was going to point at one and go, you got arrested and you didn't.
Right? They weren't really bringing up the Uso Penitentiary so much tonight, I guess, because what we didn't mention, actually, and there's not much to say about it, but Jey Uso did, I believe, yesterday or the day before, I don't remember which, but Jey Uso did get arrested for driving while intoxicated, which is a bummer and shouldn't happen, because it's not a good idea to drive while intoxicated. Yep. But it doesn't look like anything's really happening because of it. It seems to be just, you know, there is an arrest. It's on record. I think WWE released a statement that said, you know, Joshua Fatu is responsible for his own actions. And basically, he will. That's pretty much all they say in these situations, right? You know, people need to be responsible for their own actions. We're waiting for police reports and confirmation and yada, yada, yada. So I don't know if you had anything more to say about that.
No. That definitely sums it up. You need to never step behind the wheel whenever you've had a few too many beverages, you guys. I've never once driven drunk, and I never will, Sandra, because as you well know, I do not drink alcohol these days. So there you go.
No, you do not. I do drink alcohol, but I do not drive when I've had too much alcohol, because it's a bad idea.
It's not worth it for you, and it's not worth it for the people who are completely innocent who you will endanger that way.
I agree. But this segment did actually leave me a little more excited for the 2 out of 3 falls match. I was already excited for it, but it makes me so happy to see Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin showing more personality and kind of getting more into the groove of being a tag team and being part of the division. So that definitely made me happy. Like, I was really glad to see it.
Yeah, no doubt. Completely agree.
And then after that, we get an in-depth look at the 2-on-1 WWE title handicap match at the Royal Rumble. Now, David, I have banged on for weeks about how annoyed I am with Shane McMahon. In the past couple weeks, even Daniel Bryan's motivations have left me baffled. I don't really like any of this. So people know my thoughts, but you don't generally get to talk about SmackDown. So you haven't, I don't know, have you been watching SmackDown the past few weeks? Do you know what's going on? Did this video package help you? Did this video package make you so, so excited to see Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus AJ Styles?
I'm intrigued by what could come out of that, but I think they're just going to keep the title on AJ, from what I gather. How do you feel about it, though? Do you think that they're just going to, because, I mean, they've been a little loosey-goosey with the title, let's be honest, you know, putting it on gender and everything, but
I mean, you say loosey-goosey, he was champion for 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, that's loosey-goosey, though, in the head.
Accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense from a mental stability standpoint. It's something our president would book. So yeah, I don't really.
I don't know if he would like gender.
No, yeah, it's very true. It's very true. The the skin color is a little off, but yeah,
problematic.
Yeah. But yeah, this I don't think they're going to make a mockery of it to the point where they would have co-champions. I don't think that that's on their itinerary. And I don't know if I would want Sami Zayn's lone title reign in WWE to be a co-champion anyway. That's a little strange to me. So yeah, I don't know, man. But.
Like, if I had to guess, I'm guessing that they will keep the title on AJ Styles. I don't know for sure, because SmackDown does some strange things sometimes that I just can't predict. Right, but right. It makes more sense for AJ Styles to be champion going into WrestleMania. At least I prefer AJ Styles as champion going into WrestleMania, because I love AJ Styles as champion. It feels as it should be, right? Like, right. He feels like a champion, and that championship needs some prestige returned to it after the gender experiment.
Yeah, I due to the gender experiment and the fact that it does need some prestige, I would actually recommend that they keep the title on AJ, maybe even through Mania, depending on who wins. So,
no, I would be fine with a very long AJ Styles title reign. That doesn't bother me at all. I think he's a great champion. I think he's the best they have right now.
Yep.
So I am all for it.
Yeah.
But it was kind of pleasant to not have to deal with Shane McMahon bickering with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn this week, but it was a curious decision not to have them on the show.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. Were they there? Were they just not there? I don't really know what was going on.
I'm sad that it's like the one week I get to cover SmackDown and there's – The boys aren't there, so it's,
yeah. Because I mean, this whole storyline is pretty annoying, but they are great.
Yeah, no. They're fantastic. Absolutely.
Yeah. So just wanted to give you a chance to, I don't know, give your thoughts on the whole story. But
it's kind of weird, but I do love getting to watch Sami Zayn do some heel work.
Oh man, he's great when he skanks to Kevin Owens' music.
He's
one of my favorite things.
Again, I can't recommend that podcast enough. Kevin's like, I had to tell him to tone it down because he was bumping into me and shit. It's great. It's wonderful. He does.
You can tell Sammy's having so much fun with it.
He really is. Yeah, he's never got to play a heel before, so it's fun. And you would never guess that based on how good he is.
Well, you would never guess that he would be so good at talking and using his face to emote when he came to WWE from being a masked wrestler. But there we are. Like, he's just so good at everything about wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love Sammy in this heel role, but you know, all these tag teams that are vying for the tag titles, and it just feels silly that these guys aren't in the title picture over there. But I understand they've got bigger fish to fry right now with the Shane McMahon thing, but I don't like Shane McMahon, Sandra. I never have. I never will. So,
I mean, I don't know if you know this about me, David. Not the biggest Shane McMahon fan.
No, he's why I stopped watching originally, him and Stephanie. So, like, he's personally responsible for my hiatus from WWE for a decade. So,
and he has just been morphing into Stephanie more and more lately. Like, that's all he's become.
Week after week, it's like watching the slow progression of fucking Jekyll and Hyde.
It really is.
So yeah, I don't know, but I do look forward to the day when Sammy and Kevin are absolutely running roughshod over the tag division.
Oh, and I think they'd be great. I mean, the tag division on SmackDown is so stacked right now that I think it makes sense to have them in this other story, because there's so much going on in the tag division, right? Like, we have the Fashion Files, which were not on this show. I think at some point, and I don't remember when it was, I think they did show a little clip of Fashion File stuff, because we find out that the Ascension are going to be facing Aiden English and Rusev next week, because Tyler Breeze, actually, what they didn't show, I'm so angry about this, what they didn't show on the actual you know, broadcast of SmackDown was Tyler Breeze dressed as Tanae Young again. So callback to Tyler Breeze being Tanae Young and trying to interview Fandango, right? And he has this foolproof plan, David, because Fandango's like, what are you doing? I know that it's you. Like, should I be in disguise too? What's going on? And he's like, no, I was just thinking about the Royal Rumble matches, and there can only be one winner. So you enter the men's Royal Rumble, I'll enter the women's Royal Rumble, and then we can both win the Royal Rumble. We can get matching sashes. And then, of course, Aiden English and Rusev come in to interrupt their fun, and they're just not having it, right? Rusev's like, you can't enter the women's Royal Rumble. He doesn't say because he wants Lana to win, but he, you know, it's probably implied.
Yes.
Because, of course, he would want Lana to win.
Of course.
And, you know, and Aiden English starts to sing about Rusev Day, and Breezango kind of shuts him down because they don't want him to sing, and then he finally gets in a, it's Rusev Day, and just kind of, like, sneaks it in real quick, which is great. And so then, I forget how it all goes, but they decide that they need to have a match next week, and Breezango is like, well, that's great, but it's not going to be against us. It's going to be against the Ascension. And then the camera pans over, and the Ascension's sitting there, and they're like, wait, what? So Tyler Breeze and Fandango continuing the trend of them offering the Ascension up for matches, just like the Ascension offered them up to the Bludgeon Brothers multiple times in a row, right? So that story is still going on. We're still getting that. And I love that as just kind of a little story kind of within. That's the great storytelling that I want from SmackDown. Like, do more of that on this show.
Or personality, right? Because this episode is completely devoid of it.
Yes, that little Fashion Files segment, even the little clip that they showed, I feel showed more personality than the rest of this show. And the main event of the show, speaking of no personality and flat characters, Bobby Roode versus Jinder Mahal for the United States title. We are having the match tonight, and out comes Commissioner Shane McMahon. Daniel Bryan is also out ringside for the match, so they're treating this like a big deal, apparently with Kevin and Sammy not on the show and not referenced to be sent away. I was surprised that they didn't reference, like, we sent them home, or they were causing a ruckus.
Yeah.
Or something, just to explain why Kevin and Sammy weren't around at all, but I guess they didn't feel that was necessary. But having Daniel Bryan and Shane ringside, I thought was pretty cool, just because it showed that they did care about something that wasn't Kevin and Sammy drama.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see them taking an interest in their own show again. But I don't know about you, David, this match didn't really do all that much for me because it was kind of boring.
Kind of long. And you know, what's kind of sad about it too, is the fact that these guys, it's sort of like Jinder Mahal is a really shit version of Bobby Roode with how he wrestles. So their styles are somewhat similar, but not really, because they're not on the same playing field, you know? So,
right. Bobby Roode is more competent than Jinder Mahal, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But
I understand what you mean in terms of, like, basic wrestling moves, methodical.
Exactly. Their presence and their psychology and their approach, it's all cut from the same cloth, but it's sort of like this would be like wrestling 101 for Jinder, as to where you take the master class and get your doctorate with Bobby Roode. So it's just like you. And that's the issue that I have with this, is they're both wrestling the same style, and it's so obvious the difference in ability level between the two of these guys. So it sticks out like a sore thumb due to that. This really didn't click with me, unfortunately. I wish it did, because I really like Bobby Roode, and this could have been a nice moment, but this almost feels like a time where they put a belt on a guy hoping that it will legitimize the guy rather than a guy achieving a belt in hopes that it will legitimize a belt.
Yeah, and I was actually surprised that Jinder didn't win it, because I expected Jinder to win it. I expected them to try again to legitimize Jinder by putting a belt on him. And actually, character-wise, Jinder as United States champion, I think, works. I think Michael Ferrer actually summed it up perfectly on Twitter when he said this is the first time WWE has awarded a belt to a theme song.
Yeah. It's like I said, this is like their hopes that the belt will get Bobby Roode over, as opposed to Bobby Roode getting the belt over, similar to the Miz with the Intercontinental title.
I feel like it's the exact opposite of when he won the NXT title.
Yes.
Because Bobby Roode came into NXT, and I don't think he was just over because of the song.
No.
The song definitely helped, but he had stories, and he had personality, and he was an absolute dickhead. And maybe that's part of the problem, is that babyface Bobby Roode just doesn't click because there's nothing more to him than
Bobby Roode is the world's
glorious
worst babyface, and he is one of the best heels. So
he's up there with The Miz.
Yeah.
In terms of being a terrible, terrible babyface.
Yeah, and it's not his fault. He's just a dick. And you look at that guy and you're like, why would I want to cheer that guy? He is a handsome guy. He's very talented. He's got more money than me. That was like his entire get up in NXT. Why would I want to cheer that guy? So.
Yeah, exactly. You said he was going to replace the audience with people in suits who were on his level.
Exactly, exactly. This is, it makes no sense for anyone to cheer the guy. And they just don't get that because the song is over, therefore they think the performer would be over to be cheered and revered. And it just, I think the percentage of people who watch WWE on a weekly basis don't pay that much attention to NXT as to where the percentage of people who pay attention to NXT watch everything WWE on a weekly basis. So I don't know.
I don't know. Just none of it hit for me. And at the end of the match, it looks like Jinder Mahal is going to get the Coloss on Bobby Roode, right?
Yeah.
And then they just hug for a while.
Yeah.
And they just stand there and they hug for a while to the point where I was like, are they going to do something? Like, is he supposed to counter it? Is he just waiting for the Coloss? What's going on?
Yeah.
And it was the most awkward transition. It's a cool spot in theory.
Yeah.
Transitioning from the Coloss to the Glorious DDT.
Yeah.
Really cool in theory. In execution, it just looked like they were having a cuddle for a bit too long.
Yeah.
And then Bobby Roode hits the Glorious DDT and wins. And it's one of those situations where a match is over. We have a new champion. And you know what my reaction was? I went, oh, huh.
That's cool,
Bobby
I guess.
Roode's the champion. I didn't expect that. And with that level of emotion, which is not good.
No.
Because like you, I love a good tournament. I love a good tournament for a title, especially.
Yeah.
This had stakes. You know, this is important.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, oh, so Bobby Roode's the champion. Well, guess that happened. I mean, it was cool that Brian and Shane enter the ring. They present Roode with the title. They shake his hand. And, you know, Roode's just kind of celebrating as we go off the air. And I should be happy because the babyface won. I should be happy because Shane McMahon and Brian aren't bickering. They're actually showing interest in their own show. I appreciate that. But I just didn't really feel anything about it. And wrestling is at its best when it makes you feel emotions. You know, I'm always saying about how I have so many feelings. I don't have feelings about this, David. It's just, oh, now Bobby Roode is the champion. Okay.
Completely fell flat. I agree with you 10,000,000%. Sandra, I didn't even know that percentages could go that high, but they can in this instance because I absolutely agree with you. This was it's sort of like whenever you go to the doctor and you don't know what's wrong with you and you describe your symptoms and then the doctor just goes, yeah, we don't really know what's up with you, so we'll give you some pills. This was essentially what this was like. It's like
pills of no real description.
Right. Exactly. It's just this was a placebo to get that title to mean something after Dolph Ziggler was like, yeah, it doesn't mean anything to the point where I'm just going to drop it and it won't matter. So, yeah, this.
Yeah, that's real true. I mean, the only thing that made me care about this the most was seeing Vacant tweet on Twitter because I was scrolling through it. Like, I didn't watch this live, but I was scrolling through the Twitter feed from the time that it aired as I was watching just to kind of keep up and without scrolling too far ahead so I got spoiled or anything. And it was funny because when Daniel Bryan came out to say that the match was indeed going to be tonight, Vacant was like, no, this is an affront to my title reign. You're not even giving me a chance to be champion for another week because Vacant is great. One of my favorite accounts on Twitter, at WWE Vacant. But yeah, that was a lot more entertaining than the actual title match at the end of the show. So that was SmackDown, David. I don't rate shows. I don't know if you want to rate this show. I'm giving it a thumbs down, actually. And I was thinking thumbs in the middle because I didn't hate everything on it. And it wasn't that difficult to watch. And I don't feel like it was, you know, it wasn't the worst episode of SmackDown I've seen. But as I look back on it, I'm just like, this should have been a show that was exciting because it's a tournament for a title and it's different and they're deviating from the stories that I hate every week, except for the six women tag. But, you know, I got a break from Shane McMahon drama. And still, I felt nothing at the end of it. And I shouldn't feel nothing at the end of a show that has a title match. So I'm giving it a thumbs down, plus those weird promos.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely were weird. You know, Sandra, I will rate it and I will give you a thumbs because I'm a generous man. But so with this, I was thinking like a six even for this show. Because there was a title change and things happened, which is ultimately better than things not happening. But then
most of the matches had stakes.
Right, exactly. There was something tangible through them. But now that you mention that, it's got me thinking. And even though, like, things happened, I feel like they should have mattered more. And they really didn't. And so can you really give something praise if things happened and that's what your basic praise is of it?
I mean, that's a pretty low bar to set.
That's a really low bar to set. And not only that, but it should have mattered a lot more. So did it succeed by just doing the default or did it fail by failing to actually matter despite the fact that there were things that happened? So you know what, Sandra? You actually changed my opinion on this. I'm going to change it to a 4 out of 10. The good old Bret Hart special, but it will still get 4 out of 10 is still right on the cusp of thumbs in the middle for me. So it will get a thumbs in the middle leaning down.
Yeah, see, wow, 2 whole points. I didn't expect to be that influential. But yeah, I guess I really wanted more from this show. I really, really did. And I guess none of the matches really gripped me either, which is maybe the problem with the competitors that they chose for the U.S. title tournament.
Yes.
I guess I'm hoping that, you know, maybe next week we'll get something a little more interesting or exciting, or maybe we just need to get through the Rumble. Maybe that's what needs to happen, is we just need to get through the Rumble and then things, you know, we can be on the road to WrestleMania and the landscape can change and we'll see what happens and I guess we'll go from there. But
I'm going to do you a huge service here, Sandra. Okay?
What are you going to do?
Okay? I'm getting out my crystal ball right now.
All right.
Okay. And I'm putting on my genie cap. And I am going to make an official Voice of Wrestling trademark prediction here on the SmackDown summary for SmackDown.
Wow, we don't get those very often.
You never get those on SmackDown, and I never bestow my opinions upon the SmackDown universe. But alas, here I am. I'm going to say your next United States champion is... Woo! That's me peering into the crystal ball. Woo! Jinder Mahal.
Do you think they're going to set up a program with Jinder and Bobby Roode?
I do, and I think that Jinder is going to come out of it, and then Bobby will have to chase the title back.
As long as they tell a more interesting story than I'm from India, I'm glorious, then... You know, I could be into it, potentially. It's not a program that thrills me. My fear also, and Kenny keeps reminding me of this to be a good friend, and because he's not here this week, I'm trying to remind myself, is that there's always the looming threat of Dolph Ziggler. And the looming threat of Dolph Ziggler coming back and saying, hey, I never lost the title, I just decided to set it down in a ring, and now I'm gonna have a program with Bobby Roode again. Really just fills me with all kinds of dread.
That sounds terrible.
So... I think I would take Jinder Mahal versus Bobby Roode over Dolph Ziggler versus Bobby Roode, even though the matches won't be as good. I cannot handle that exercise and sadness. I hope Dolph Ziggler is just enjoying a trip to the sun.
The very idea of Dolph Ziggler even returning, Sandra, just, it makes me nauseous. I don't even want it at this point.
I mean, think how I feel.
Because just the idea of him relinquishing the title, just he's like, nah, I won this. Took me a long time to win it, but it really doesn't matter. And I'm going to prove how little it matters by saying I no longer want it and then just walking out.
I mean, I guess he stayed away for more than a week, unlike Natalia, when she made her fake I might be retiring because none of you like me speech and then was just back and fine.
Yeah, yeah, with no explanation.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense at all. She's still just wearing cat ears and being the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be, which isn't even her phrase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Living off the coattails of her uncle.
Yep, Exactly. I don't know. Yuck. So many things are exercises and frustration on SmackDown. I'm just really hoping things get better. But anyway, David, thank you so much for joining me here on the SmackDown Summary. And I wish it were a better episode for you. I mean, I got a great Raw, at least, if that makes you feel better.
You did. You did. And at least I got an eventful SmackDown.
Yeah, some things happened. I think it was, you know, decent enough to generate discussion, if not excitement or emotion.
Yes.
So, you know, at least there's that. David, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to tell you, you know, that your opinions are great about SmackDown or that they suck or whatever else they're going to say to you?
Well, they're going to tell me how smart I am, first and foremost. And they can be sure to follow me at Zoopsoul, at Zoopsoul. Sandra, I got a question for you.
What's that, David?
Ain't I great?
Of course you are. I'm so glad you've joined me this week.
I'm doing the Jeff Jarrett strut just for you right now.
I mean, I'm sure you're doing it better than Jeff Jarrett because that guy sucks. I don't care if he is the current NWA North American champion in my current timeline on Retro Raw. Fuck Jeff Jarrett. He's awful. That match was bad. I did not need to see it. I don't know what Jim Cornette is thinking.
And what is up with his wrestling gear of the 90s?
He's I don't know.
Yeah, it's so goofy.
It's very angular and has an arrow pointing to his dick. And it looks like it came from space, but then got caught in a trash compactor or something. I don't know. It's very strange.
It looks like something out of a sci-fi movie from the late 60s.
It really, really does. Or something from like Xenon.
Yeah,
Xenon. Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no. I 110% agree.
Just not as shiny.
Which is less than 1,000,000%, like I agreed earlier, but regardless.
Still, I'll take it. You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW, follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes, and check us out on Patreon. Upcoming Royal Rumble review for Retro Raw is going to be posted sometime this weekend. We're not entirely sure. Obviously, Kenny's still on tour with Shawn Michaels, so schedule has been a bit disrupted. We'll also have a couple episodes of Yellow Ropes Forever going up, I hope, this weekend, because we need to review last week's as well as the one that airs tonight, which I haven't watched yet, and I'm kind of looking forward to. So all sorts of content going up on Patreon all the time, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And check us out. Also, if you want to support the show another way that doesn't cost you anything, you can use our Amazon links. Now I feel like a shill, but go to insidetheropes.co.uk/Amazon and then choose your country. There's Canada, US, and the UK. And if you use our Amazon links, then we get just a little bit of money and you don't have to spend anything more. And if you're like me, you don't like to leave the house to buy things, so you do a lot of shopping on Amazon, and you can help out Inside the Ropes, which is always appreciated. So thank you very much. Any parting words for the people today, David?
There is so much bad going on in the world that there is no reason to contribute to that in any way whatsoever. Be it holding the door open for somebody at the supermarket, be it biting your tongue and not being a dick on an online message board or a forum or a chat or a Facebook post or anything of the sort, even if it's just giving some money to a homeless person, anything that you can do to make the world a better place and not contribute to the negativity is a battle well won. So be sure to stay the course and be good people out there. I trust in you all.
I wholeheartedly agree. Talk to you next week, everyone. Bye.
So long, everybody.